Welcome to the third episode of The World Exists, a podcast out of South Philadelphia. My name is Brady Dale, and this is a storytelling podcast. We're going to tell you a little bit about us, our lives, what we've done, and where we've been so far.
Well, what's going to happen is that we are going to have a storyteller tell us all a story. And all of us are just going to sit here like friends and listen. And we're going to have a roundtable discussion about it, and it's going to be nice. And I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoy saying things.
So let me tell you who you're with today. Again, my name is Brady Dale, and I'm here with...
TJ Hurley.
R. Eric Thomas.
Jamie Fontaine.
Hillary Ray.
And Brady Dale is the cartoonist behind eatthebabies.com. He is author of the Kindle book Dream Her Back. And you can find him on Twitter at Brady Dale.
Hey everybody, how's it going? My name is Brady Dale. And so my story today is the story of how I took my middle school dream girl to prom. And that sounds like it's pretty awesome on my part. You can just let me know when we get there. So I want to give some context initially. So I, as far back as I remember, as I can remember, I thought that girls were just like the best thing. Like I don't ever remember.
The best thing is pizza.
I liked pizza a lot too, but I liked girls more. And I will even go far enough to say that I don't ever remember not having a crush on someone. Like I can tell you at almost any age, like there was some girl that I had a crush on, like all the time. And I remember it kind of pissed me off when I got to middle school and girls started to care about boys and boys started to care about girls, but none of the girls cared about me at all. And they all cared about these guys who hadn't. I was like, I've been here for years, ladies.
You were the early
Pizza
adopter.
Loves you back.
Yeah.
Early adopter. I'm sorry. I was the late adopter for that joke.
I was totally the girl's early adopter. I loved girls. Like, and it's not like, I mean, I will just some additional context. So I grew up in a neighborhood where most of the kids my age to hang out with were girls. And I loved hanging out with the girls, but they weren't all girls. And like, it's not the kind of thing where. And I feel this is necessary to say, and you can interpret that whatever way you want. When I was on my own, I wasn't like playing with Barbies or anything. I was playing with He-Mans. But like, and when I was with dudes,
wouldn't it be He-Men?
Yeah, it would be. It would be He-Men and the Masters of the Universe, though they were only ever at Eternia. But anyway, we won't digress there. But if I was hanging out with other dudes, I was totally. We played War at recess. Like that was the stuff I liked. But if I went over to a girl's house. And she wanted to play some version of House. It's totally down with playing House. Now, I was like, but I'm a superhero, right? Like, I mean, we're married and we're washing dishes or whatever, but I'm also like, I go fight crime. And she was like, that's fine.
Is that how your current relationship works?
I mean, I do have an over-exaggerated sense of my own value in the world. So I guess, yeah, still doing that. So anyway, the point being, like, it's not like I did girly things when girls weren't around, but I loved being near girls. Okay. So the middle school comes. I grew up in Southeast Kansas, as I think folks know, and this is important to the story. So the way my middle school worked, I don't know, maybe all middle schools have this, but every morning we went to a teacher advisor, like kind of a homeroom. You guys have, like, yeah?
Yeah.
We had that? All right,
yes.
Cool.
Private school.
I was all public, but so we went to like a homeroom, but we also in my school, like for like the most of the semester, it wasn't quite the whole semester, but for most of the semester, 2 days a week you would go to a club in the morning, like at the same time. So like 3 days a week you'd go to this homeroom, and 2 days a week you'd go to this club for like 30 minutes before school started. And there were all kinds of clubs, and I think the way they picked the clubs was just whatever interest the teachers had. The teachers, like, every teacher ran a club, and it was just like, I want to do chess club, I want to do storyteller club, like I want to do board game club, whatever, you know, they would just do it. And so I don't know what we were meant to get from club, but my favorite club and the club I did the most semesters in middle school, because you would pick a club for the semester, was I liked the Brain Teasers Club. And so what Brain Teasers Club was it was this club where the teachers gave us like mind games, you know, like, I don't know, puzzles to work out or whatever. And that wasn't what I liked about it. What I liked about it, the real reason I liked it, was because you got points every session for the number for how well you did on this on the puzzles. And at the end of the semester, you could use the points in an auction to get like candy and toys and stuff like that. I know.
That's like a great way of underhandedly bribing children to do things.
I know, it is.
Great.
When I was in third grade, we had this long-term substitute who paid us in chips every that would get taken away every time we said like or to try and make us more eloquent as third graders.
Mm-hmm.
And we could use those to buy lots of things, like pencil sharpeners shaped like globes, which I got.
That's the thing. I don't understand why we bribe children to do things. We just make children do things. Like, just they're children. We should bribe adults because I don't have to do anything. Bribe me to pay my taxes, and I will. But, like, as a child, like, do this, or you don't eat, child.
And, like, the thing that blows my mind about
that, that might not be a bribe, but that's actually blackmail. it is a form of coercion.
The thing about brain teasers and, like, what kind of makes me feel guilty about it in retrospect is, like, I don't know, but I cannot imagine the school district actually gave the teachers any money to run these clubs, you know? So, like, these women must have just bought all this crap themselves and, like, you know, so God bless them. I think their names were Miss Barbridge and there was two of them, and maybe Miss Thompson. I don't know. So thank you, ladies, if you're out there. I appreciated the candy and the toys. They were.
They're listening to this podcast too.
Yeah, no, they probably are. My 11th grade English teacher follows me very closely on Facebook, so there's an excellent chance.
Creepy.
So I really liked brain teasers. So I was in 8th grade. And there was this girl in 7th grade, and as soon as I saw her, I was like, that is where one of the many crushes I had at any one time is gonna go. But I was like, I definitely have a crush on her, and we'll call her Amy.
Brady, can I ask you a question? When you were like a little kid and you had crushes on girls, when you were like 8, did you have crushes on like 8-year-olds or did you have crushes on like older girls? Because I remember like. When I was a little kid, like I wasn't one of the boys who liked girls because they would have like 6th grade girlfriends and I would be like, you're attracted to that girl? Like, she looks like you. It's just like, you know what I mean? The idea of like, I remember thinking that women were attractive, but not like 6th graders, you know, like, could you calibrate it like that? I feel like the people I've been attracted to have been the same my whole life.
I definitely like girls my own age. And yeah, I liked all kinds of girls. Yeah.
I'm not accusing you of being weird now. I'm saying as an 8-year-old.
You're accusing yourself of being weird as a child?
No.
You know, I get it. You're no, I was it. As an 8-year-old, I was totally into other 8-year-olds. I thought they were awesome. I mean, I'm sure I liked older girls too. In fact, I have a whole other story about an older girl that I was insane about. But no, I totally liked girls my own age, and this girl is a little younger than me. So one other thing that is worth noting though is I always loved girls, but I was a dork, as I think we sort of. Basically established in the story,
no,
right?
No.
That's kind of a dork.
No.
And one of the things I hated is as girls started to like, you know, become hot and cute, I hated...
Brady's making a boob gesture with his hands right now. I don't think he knew he was doing it, but he's totally doing it.
As soon as anyone says hot, that's what he does with his hands.
Yeah, it's true.
I saw him try again.
So when... It's just, it's my progress of the story gesture, folks.
It happens to look like boobs.
Very concerned about breast cancer. So there were other nerdy dudes who I was friends with, and I hated watching the way that girls would push them around and just be like, oh, Joshua, can I have your pen? And he'd be like, what's my only pen? It's like, well, I really need one. Okay. Like, I hated that. Like, I totally did not want to be the kid who got pushed around by girls because I knew they didn't like me. So, like, fuck them. Like, they can't just because they, you know, make nice eyes or whatever, make me do things. So, but like.
Like the hand boob motion?
Right. Like that. If they would make the hand boob motion, I'd be like, no, I don't. It's hot, but I'm not going to do it. whatever it is you want. And so it really pissed me off. But, like, the trouble was, like, you would think, like, oh, if girls were asking me to, like, do, like, let them copy. This is the important thing. Let them copy off of my homework, right? And I refused. Does that make me kind of cool? No, it didn't make me cool because I couldn't do it in a cool way. I couldn't be like, no. I'd just be like, you know, and, like, just not really able to respond. Like, I would succeed in refusing but not in, like, asserting any level of, like, strength, you know?
So, wait, you didn't let people copy your work?
Well, here's where we're getting
to. As a rule?
Well, here's the deal. This is the solution I arrived at, though. So, you know, I did really well in school, and I actually, eventually I was like, and this happened in middle school, I was like, you know what, like, I don't want to let girls push me around, but I also was like, I don't give a shit if people copy off of me, and I don't just want to refuse on principle. So I actually, and this lasted all the way through high school and college, I developed this policy, like, I don't, you know what, I'm going to get an A, like, what the fuck ever, I don't care. Anybody, as long as you don't get me in trouble, and no one ever did, I don't give a shit. So anybody could copy off me. I didn't care if you were cute, ugly, whatever. If you could see it, take it. I wasn't one of those people. You know, remember the people who'd build the giant barriers?
Me.
Yeah, no. No surprise.
Yeah, no, see, I took your I took your route because the way I always put it to people who I saw copying off my paper was, I'm not the one who's getting in trouble for this. You are. So, you know, don't copy all my answers was my method. And some guy got through 2 years of honors English because he copied like 2/3 of all of my answers.
Yeah.
I went to private school. We didn't copy.
My freshman year of high school, we had music history class, and I loved music history class. And I wrote my report on George Gershwin, and I made this really sparkly cover. It had like a G clef made out of glitter, and it said, George Gershwin, he's got rhythm. And then the next semester, when I wasn't in music history, someone that I had bragged and showed off my paper to, and just the cover, named their paper, George Gershwin, he's got rhythm. I was pissed.
Yeah. Maybe the end that story with, and I killed him.
Only in my mind.
I bet they didn't do, they probably couldn't imitate your quality glitter work, though.
There was no sparkly G-clef.
Yeah.
At all.
No. Then it's no George Gershwin report at all.
Yeah, I'm
That's
with
what
you.
I always say.
Was everybody at this table like overachievers? I mean, I was not. I barely graduated high school, but was everybody else?
I was.
Yeah. Overachievers, yeah.
I was definitely awful.
I was a weird slacker overachiever. Like, I could do really well, but I never did my homework. I had this problem where I'd, like, I just didn't feel like it because I had a job, and that was more important because I needed to eat. And so it was like, oh.
Coal mines?
Wawa, but similar, yeah. But I didn't put a lot of effort into it, but except for math and chemistry, because that was science math, I just did well in school.
And hoagie arts?
I actually mostly was good at remembering what cigarettes everyone got.
That's a
or guessing by hug. How you looked what kind of cigarettes you smoked.
This is a brutal digression, but can you go around the table and guess what brand of cigarettes we would all smoke?
If everyone, all right. This is fun this
if
is
you
interesting.
Say Newports for Eric. That's so fucked up.
No, Eric is no Eric. To be perfectly honest, Eric, given his dramatic hand gestures and like glamorousness in everyday life, I would put you as like a Virginia Slims 120.
Yeah,
totally, you're yeah, and totally. You would not be ashamed to buy those, and you would not be smoking menthol. Brady, I kind of feel like you'd be a secret self-hating menthol smoker. You'd be like Parliament menthol lights. Yeah, Hillary, I can't imagine you buying cigarettes. Yeah, I can't. TJ, at least at the time, you would have been a Camel Lights smoker. Yeah, you would have been Camel Lights, Virginia Slims 120s, Parliament Menthols. You would be the person, Hillary, you'd be the person that came in to buy cigarettes with the card, where if I actually sold you cigarettes without IDing you, you would give me the red card that would get me in trouble at work. So I would, and I would be able to see in your eyes and have to ask you for ID and then be like, no, you're 17, I can't sell you cigarettes. And then I'd get the green card because you would be one of those kids that was so anti-smoking that you went on anti-smoking cigarette shopping sprees. I mean that in a nice way.
Which brings us to Brady Dale's story.
Yeah, sorry. This was a weird digression, but I think it was important.
That was very important.
I'd like to believe that I would smoke Pall Malls, but... I'm in Brain Teasers one day. And Amy... That's what we'll call her, is in there with me. And I remember that we were just doing a lot of times it was more interactive stuff than this, but this day it was just like little worksheety things that we were doing. And like, they let everyone kind of form up into groups with their friends. And obviously I didn't get to hang out with Amy and her friends, but I was at a table fairly near hers. And I think maybe my friends weren't there that day. I don't know. But I remember I was kind of sitting at my desk alone. And so I'm sitting there, and this is important to frame. So imagine my school desk in front of me, and Amy has her back to me at the school desk that's like off to my left and just in front, but like so close that I could reach out and touch her with my hand if I wanted to. And so they're all working on their paper.
Did you want to?
I definitely wanted any part of her that she wanted to touch.
Boob gesture.
Yeah. Boobs were a major part of Amy's appeal in seventh grade. Early developer.
Early adopter.
And I also, like, I think this is an important element of Amy's character. So she was a jock girl, you know, and like the thing that was so hot about jock girls, and I got this even at a young age, is like the jock girls are just like no other chunk of girls. And it's different than jock guys, but like jock girls had this like sexuality to them that was just like their body was just this fucking thing they used, man, like, you know, and like that was just, they just like throw it at things and I hit things with it and it's awesome. Yeah, girls, high five.
Do you know what sex is?
No, but like other people act like, you know, their body is like they're just this mind that's floating through the world, whereas like jock chicks were so present in their bodies.
So that connection to their physical being was like, okay.
That was, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, yeah, it was awesome. So, and Amy totally was one of those. So I'm sitting there doing my worksheet, and Amy's on the table in front of me. And I guess Amy decided that she wanted to look at what I was writing. And in her jock girl way, she didn't, like, turn around and, like, look and talk to me. She just, like, leaned backwards and laid her head on my desk. So, like, A, it's just miles of breasts right there in front of me, and B, she lays her head on my desk, and this is a moment that I will not forget for the rest of my life. Like, this was a series of sensations. I was just like, as long as you want to stay there, just look, just memorize it, I don't care. But like her head was right by my hand, and I could feel her breathing on my hand. Like, I could feel her breath going in and out of her mouth, and it was, I mean, there was no more sublime experience that I had had in the 11 years that I'd been on this earth. And I had such a crippling crush on this girl. And I just, you know, she looked at whatever and I was in a zone. And then she got up and went back and wrote down whatever had written there. And I'm sure I wasn't able to think like the rest of the, you know, the rest of the club. So that happened. So she was a year ahead of me in school. So I go to high school first, and then she comes after me.
So wait, she was a year behind you?
Right. Yes. No.
You were so enraptured in the visual image of a young, what was her name?
Amy. Yeah.
That you forgot.
Right.
You got how old you are or where you are right now.
I'm sorry. If thinking about a 14-year-old girl's breast gets you weirded out, you know, lock me up.
I thought this was a free country.
Just note to podcast listeners, too, on that sort of behind or before, however that works. I am not making a breast motion, Jamie.
No, I was.
Just as a note, if there's any kind of binary relationship, you can virtually guarantee that I'll get it wrong. Like, I'll say, like, if I mean left, I'll say right, whatever. So, okay. So I was kind of an overachiever, as we've established, and actually Amy totally was too. She wasn't just a jock girl. She was, you know, smart. She, like, was in all the clubs, like, whatever.
She had it all. I bet she has a career and a family right now.
She has such a fucking family. It's so boring.
Do you know this from, like, normal person contact with her, or do you know this from internet
stalking
contact with her?
I mean, a little, it's like...
Column A, column B?
It's a little of both, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I come from a small town. It's hard not to know. So so I get to high school, and my sophomore year, I run for president of my class.
Of course.
And there's no way that I should have won it. Like, there's no way, because I ran against this kid, Ryan. And Ryan was, like, probably the most popular guy in my class. And the only reason I won, and this is why I won, and it wasn't even intentional at the time, but we did class speeches. You know, we sort of gave the argument in front of everybody. And Ryan and I had both been on student government our freshman year, and we'd both been a thing called freshman reps. So, like, there were just four reps of every class. It was the easiest seat to get. Like, it's basically, you never even had four people run for all of them. And so he and I had both put our names in for freshman rep. We both got it. And I went to every single meeting of student government, you know, that year, unless I had some really strong reason to miss it. And he never went. And so I just said that during my speech. I was just like, you know.
Wow. I went right for the trash talk.
To me, it just like it didn't seem like that big of a deal. I'm just like, you know, I think you should vote for me for all these reasons. And, you know, Ryan and I were both in student government last year, and he never showed up for meetings, which I didn't think I was, like, really dropping it, but just, like, you know, relevant fact. Like, he never fucking came, and I did.
The weird thing is, in real politics, that actually doesn't work. A local guy tried to run against Bob Brady, who's a local fat cat politician, and he one of the things that he brought up was the fact that Bob Brady had actually showed up to work, like, I think a seventh of the days he was supposed to, and Everybody was like, nah, it's okay.
Yeah, we like
it. I once went to a party with Bob Brady. He was very nice.
He's not a hard guy to find in Philadelphia.
No, if you he loves Jerry Blavatt.
If you want to find him in
that
Washington.
That party was Jerry Blavatt's birthday party.
Apparently trickier. So
I was on the list.
So I say this, and everybody in the class just starts laughing at Ryan, and he loses. And I didn't think it was that, but it blew my mind. It was amazing. So
was that your first big laugh that you ever got?
That was... probably not. No, I don't think that was my first big laugh, and it wasn't even a joke.
Have you blocked your first laugh out because it wasn't a laugh that was with you, but rather at you?
Nah, I don't know what it was. I mean, I was on stage a lot as a kid. That was funny.
So many laughs, Jamie.
Yeah, I just
so many laughs.
When you're this fucking good, I mean, you're this
DJ
good.
Successes as a child. So many.
I wasn't. I will say, of my various attributes as a young kid, no one ever described me as angelic. That's for sure. So I won, and then the next year I ran for school president, and I won that because no one really ran against me. But then going into my senior year, my friend Edward Gometz said that he was going to run for president, and I didn't think I could beat Edward because neither of us were super popular, but people kind of liked him a little bit better because he was sort of funny in a way people liked. But then, this guy, Mike, announces that he's going to run for school president, and Mike is the guy who'd beat me for junior class president the year before with a negative campaign that I'll tell another time. But, so I was like, fuck, there's no way that I can beat Mike. And I was really kind of hated him. He was a nice guy, but he had run like a really hostile negative campaign against me. I'll just say this. People were wearing campaign stickers around my school that had a big circle drawn on it and said, vote for Mike because he doesn't look like this.
Wait, it was a picture of you?
It was like, it was meant to be like, you know, this fat, like, yeah, it was like I was drawn as like a fat circle.
Can I get those?
Yeah. Did you do a reprint?
They were handmade.
Did the circle have a face or it was just a circle?
I think they were all handmade by this one girl who really hated me. And so I think there's a wide variety in the way they were done. Yeah.
Did you not grow legs or arms until after high school?
It's one of my, I tried to run on it, sort of like the disability vote, but yeah. So I really sucked that Mike was going to run against me, but I knew he was way more popular than me, and I couldn't beat Mike. But then my friend Emily, who like really isn't popular at all, decided to throw her name into the race for president. And so I was just like, fuck this, I'll just run for treasurer. And Edward was like, fuck this, I'll run for vice president. And so we were like going to be in. Nobody ran against us. We were good. We were on the student government council. A little humiliating to go from being president of the school down to treasurer of the school in your senior year, but whatever, I could deal with it. And then, but this was awesome, because someone tried to run a negative campaign against Emily, and Emily had been kind of a party girl and was sort of a liberal, and there were all kinds of rumors about her. So,
wait, liberal and conservative come into play in this high school presidential
She lived
race.
Liberally. No.
Oh, okay.
She lived liberally, which is relevant to the thing they did to run against her, was somebody made a sticker that was said, vote for Mike, he's not a dyke. Yeah. And amazingly, in my hometown in Southeast Kansas, which is like liberal for Kansas, but it's still fucking Kansas, like there was a backlash. Like they were just like, fuck that. Like it's okay to call that smart kid fat, like fuck him, but but like don't call Emily a dyke. And so Mike got trounced, he lost, Emily was president of our class. But the other awesome thing about that election, for me personally, and the reason why I really wanted to get into the executive circle of student government for my last year there wasn't just for my college applications, but because Amy was also running that year for secretary. So that meant that I would get to go to lots of meetings with Amy.
Which is the pinnacle of romance.
It is, I know.
Meetings.
I mean, private meetings, you know.
You could just be like, hey, Amy, can you write this down?
Yeah, I know. But that wasn't the end of my Amy connection in my senior year.
After all those meetings, huh?
There was more. So I was a salesman at the JCPenney's in our local mall, and our local mall was about as long as like a Philadelphia city block, like it's just a tiny like seven stores, whatever. And Amy's dad had opened up a bookstore in the mall, and that was pretty cool. It was like the second bookstore our town ever had, and I would go in there all the time, like after work or whatever. And because I knew Amy, and like, you know, her dad knew who I was, and like I was a nice kid in school, I would chat with him all the time. And one day her dad was like, and I was actually, this was in my senior year when we were on student government together anyway, so he knew me that way too. He was like, listen, I think you're a good kid. I need some help in here. I know you like books. So like whatever JCPenney's is paying you, I'll add a quarter and add an hour to that, or maybe it's 50 cents an hour or something like that. And I'll, you know, have you come over here, and you don't have to dress as, you know, like as, you don't have to dress up as much, and I'll teach you how a bookstore works, and you like books. And I was like, that's awesome. It's not just awesome because I would much rather work in a bookstore than the children's section of JCPenney's. Are you fucking kidding? I hate the word cute, just as an aside. But I got to go work in this bookstore, and Amy worked in there all the time too. So that was awesome. So the one thing that I remember from those days is pretty often on Friday nights, Amy and I would be the ones who would run the store. It's a pretty small store. So we would just kind of, and Friday night there wasn't a ton of people coming in there. The store was only open until 9 o'clock. And so, you know, we'd mostly just sort of hang out and bullshit and like maybe we'd do some inventories or whatever, but like, you know, I mean, it was her dad's store, so she didn't screw around too much, but
so you had meetings and did inventories? Is there something I don't know about inventory?
Actually, I have a really romantic inventory story. I'm not going to tell it now. It's a little long, but it's inventory is very romantic of books.
I mean, if it meant me being in the room with Amy, I was happy.
Did you guys ever take inventory of your hearts?
I took inventory of my heart to Amy all the time.
TJ, that was the name of your first album? Your first solo album.
So the one thing I remember is every now and then afterwards, Amy and I would hang out. Like, we were just friends. I was totally just a friend of hers. And the closest it ever got to anything sexual ever happening is, I was like, oh, you want to watch a movie after our shift's over? And she's like, yeah, sure, let's go to Dylan's, which is a grocery store, and we'll rent a movie. And so we rented a movie, which was, the movie we rented was actually When a Stranger Calls, which if you've never seen it, it's pretty good, but it's sequel, When a Stranger Calls Back, is like one of the finest of the thriller genre, and everyone should look that up. But we went and saw When a Stranger Calls, and I remember I was like, oh, should we buy a pie? Because Dylan's had all these pies for like $2, like an entire pie. And and so we bought a pie, we bought an apple pie, and we brought it back to her house to watch it. And I knew her parents were out of town because, you know, her dad was my boss. And so I was like, that's pretty cool. But then it turns out that her older sister is there. And that kind of sucks. And so they're going to watch a movie with us, whatever. I was like, maybe I would possibly have courage to, like, make a move. There was no way I was going to. But so we have this pie and we're going to eat it. And so Amy's like, well, I'll get us some forks. And I should I get plates? And I was like, I don't think you should get plates. We should just, like, eat it straight out of the, you know, straight out of the pie. And it's just you and me. And that also seemed kind of sexy in a way. I don't know. And then
No, it doesn't.
Absolutely not.
We were sharing a thing. Come on, guys.
I don't know. Wait, pie is like the least sexy.
I am back in the seventh grade right now. Oh, wait, this is my senior year.
I'm
whatever.
Trying to think of a way that you could like eat a pie from either end and come and kiss in the middle of it. Like on
Like Lady and the like Tramp, Lady the most Tramp, romantic of all films.
I'm having a tough time.
So Amy goes into the kitchen and she's like, should I get us plates? And her sister says, why would you need plates if you're just going to eat out of the pan? And I'll never forget what Amy said at that moment. She said, I don't know. I've never done this before. It did feel like I was getting somewhere.
Since then, have you ever been that turned on again?
Do you share a lot of pies like that with women? Is that how you romance a lady?
I do.
By eating an entire pie without
I like a lady to show me a willingness to eat high caloric food. I'll say that's held on. Maybe that's why. Like, if a girl won't eat ice cream in front of me, it just pisses me off.
What if she'd rather eat half a pie?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. Like, no, not ice cream tonight. Let's do half a pie. Like, that feels good. I feel good about that. I'm more of a cake guy, but whatever. So it's my senior year, and I'm like, I think I want to go to senior prom with Amy. And a really good friend of mine was in band with Amy, and I was like, you know, do you think I could go to prom with Amy? And she's like, yeah. Amy was a junior, so this wasn't like her like special prom. She didn't need to make it like super important. She's like, yeah, I think Amy would probably go with you. You know, you should just ask her. And I was like, how do I do it? And she's like, you just ask her. And like, we had this whole huge conversation, and I had this idea about making it special and like, you know, being really cool, but I was afraid to do all those things. But here was what I here's how I did do it is, and this is I'm going to tell you this, and it's really dorky, and I just want you to know, to this day, and I think to the day till the day I die, I'm going to be really proud of this. Like I'm legitimately, like I'm honestly, I should be embarrassed. I'm telling you this, but like I'm proud of this.
Did you eat an entire pie by yourself to show her?
No, that's I could do that now. Like whatever. No, what I'm proud of is in my senior year, it used to be in my high school that the way that you were, it was okay for you as a student to be in the hallways is to have a pink slip that we had, teachers had all these pads of pink slips and they'd fill it out. And if you had a pink slip, it was cool for you to be in the hallways, right? But kids were stealing them all the time and forging them, and it was just too easy to game the system. And so in my senior year, every teacher got this this big, heavy red plastic thing. And it had a piece of paper in it that was specially designed, and you would and you had to like have the student's name written on it and where they were going and what their time was, like on this heavy red thing. And like that was the only thing that could allow you to be in the hallways. And in my senior year, I never fucking touched one of those things. Like I would just go in the hallways, do whatever I wanted. I would like write sign myself out of school like all the time. Because nobody ever questioned anything that I did. Like I could just wander. I'd just be like, I'm just gonna go wherever I wanted. And like I could walk right by the principal. Hey, how you doing? No red thing in my hand. I'd be like, hey, Brady, I'm sure you're up to good things. Keep going. And I was. That's why they let me do those things. But still, I felt like a rebel. So
by never doing anything remotely wrong in your entire life.
Or being even kind of cool.
Yeah.
Right. I got to do.
I guess that's a form of rebellion. You were rebelling against being popular.
Yeah, I was. I successfully...
That was popularity.
You know, I had a similar thing because I never did anything wrong as a teenager because I could have gotten away with all of it. So then when I was like, oh, okay, like I didn't do anything cool up to this very day, actually. I've never done anything cool. But
you got hit by that car once. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I did get hit by a car once. It wasn't cool, though. Not really.
Well, I'm really cool now, and you invited me to be on one of your shows. So by transitive property, you've now organized a cool
Nothing
event.
Nothing will make me cool. I've tried everything.
So one day, Amy and I are doing some student government thing, and so we're wandering the halls together because we can do whatever we want because we're dorky kids. And during one of those times, I was just like, hey, Amy, do you have someone you're going to prom with? And she said no, and I was like, what do you think about us going together? And she was like, yeah, that would be cool. I was like, this is amazing. I'm going to prom with Amy. And the one thing I was kind of worried about it, because I've always been like really wigged out if like romance squares with work at all. So I felt nervous with the fact that her dad was my boss and that I was going to prom with him. But he brought it up with me eventually. He was like, oh, that's cool. You guys are going. And the moment I remember from that is he was like, oh, yeah, Amy and her mom and I were out shopping for prom dresses. This weekend. And so, you know, we picked one out for her, and I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, did you enjoy that? And he was like, not really. You know, I just kind of stood there. And I mean, I'd say things like, maybe that one shows a little too much cleavage. And I remember thinking, I was like, that was probably the one that maybe she should have stuck with. I'm pretty sure she didn't. God damn it. Yeah,
slut it up, kids.
Mr. Amy. Mr. Amy.
Mr. Amy.
So we went to prom together, you know, all my buddies were there. We all had our tuxedos on. They rented the, like, flashy cummerbunds and the, like...
Nerds in tuxedos is, like, till this day, it's, like, infuriating. I want to bully those kids. When I see dorks in tuxedos, I want to give them wedgies, like, oh.
My buddies sprung
How
for the...
How do you feel about butlers?
Well...
Rage?
They're working class. They can't be nerds.
True. Have you seen
butlers? That's a very good point.
There, many butlers are English, which automatically makes them nerds.
Or very classy.
They
can be both. Eric.
My buddy sprung for the top hats and the canes.
Oh. I want to beat them.
Even
up.
I would beat them up, but I'm a black fag from Baltimore.
Do you want to get Brady a swirly after?
Absolutely. Go upstairs. Swirly yourself.
And so I go to prom with Amy, and we hang out with my friends. Kevin and Cynthia, like we went with them and we hang out with them at Cynthia's place until like 3 a.m. watching movies. And like, there is just not even the faintest hint of like anything going on between me and Amy the whole time. And so I drive her back to her house at like 3 a.m. And I do like the worst possible thing that a boy can do in this instance. So I know I'm going away to college in like a few months and I'm going away. And, I was just like, so Amy, is there like, we hang out all the time. Is there anything between us? And she's like, no. There's not. but you're going away to college. You should get, I thought I was going to school in the South. She's like, you should get one of those Southern girls. And I was like, I bet I won't. I didn't. So that was cool. So here's, you know, years later, we kind of did continue to be friends, and I would hang out with her when I came home sometimes, but it definitely, I cared a lot more about the friendship than she did, and it sort of trickled off. And then eventually I lived in Washington, D.C. after college, and here's the sad end of the story. I haven't seen her since like a few years, sometime in college was the last time I saw her. And the sad end of the story is I was still kind of in touch with her dad for years because he was a little bit of a mentor to me. And like, you know, he ran the bookstore and I would go and visit him and whatever until he eventually closed the bookstore. I didn't really see him anymore, but I was kind of in touch with him. And one time I was home and it was around the time that I was finally leaving D.C. But he was like, oh, well, Amy's married now. And she's actually living in D.C. She's a teacher in D.C. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. She's like, yeah, she's been there for like 6 or 7 months now. And it bummed me out so hard. Because there's no way she couldn't have known that I was there just with our town and like the way we were, like people had to have been like, oh, you know, Brady's in DC. But she never contacted me and I got in touch with her through her dad because I'm a glutton for punishment. And like, you know, she's married now. I had no vision of anything happening, but I did just sort of continue to, I thought she was great and I thought we were good friends. And so I tried to reach out. I was like, oh, it'd be awesome to see you, you know, here in town. I mean, I'm leaving soon, but it'd still be cool to see you before I left. She's like, yeah, that would be so awesome. Not quite awesome enough, though, because it never quite happened. And then I moved away, and now she's got lots of babies, and I think back in Kansas, and I just don't even try anymore. So there you go.
So maybe the question to be less of a bummer should be about the prom and all of our separate experiences with the prom.
Yeah, I'm all for it. So does everyone else want to say kind of a quick their highlight of their personal prom story growing up?
Highlight is an interesting way of putting it. So I went to the prom with one of those nerds in a tuxedo that you would beat up, TJ. He already had the tuxedo from jazz bands.
Oh, no.
He played jazz guitar.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. No.
Amy was in band. Still hot.
I will beat him up right now.
I can't know his address anymore because he went on to stalk me briefly while I was in college. So that was cool. But before he stalked me.
Maybe he's cooler than I thought.
That was after his weird I'm going to India but really just California phase. But anyway, before all of that happened, I have excellent taste in humans. Before all of that happened, he asked me to prom, and I was really excited because I had a secret crush on him, even though he was a weird nerd who owned his own tuxedo, and so we went to the prom. But neither of us actually wanted to be at the prom because the prom was terrible. Who wants to fucking go to the prom? It's awful. So we waited. Yeah, we waited until the earliest possible point we could leave, and then we left so we could go make out before it was time for him to drive me home. But the thing about Pennsylvania is that there is a curfew for drivers, and instead of driving his piece of shit, like, Ford Topaz, which he taught me how to break into, and if he still had that car and it were here, I would be able to break into it, just so you know, it was a faulty window. He borrowed his dad's giant white SUV, and so we left, and we drove in the giant white SUV to a park where we started to make out, and were promptly caught because it was really obvious. And since I still don't have a driver's license, and he was not yet 18, we were supposed to wait for a ride from his dad, who had to come from 45 minutes away. So, and the police officer, who was laughing at us the entire time, just got sick of waiting. So he dropped us off at my prom date's mom's house, where we actually had to just wait in the garage because his parents were going through an acrimonious divorce, and he called his dad because his mom wouldn't understand the getting caught making out by the police thing. So then we had to get in a police car where the police officer laughed at us for about 15 minutes, as he was right to do. And then I got out of the terrible back of the police car in my formal wear and waited in a garage in the cold until my prom date's dad and brother came to pick us up, and then his brother, who was fresh out of rehab, laughed at us for another 40 minutes, and then I told my mom I was late because we had a broken taillight, and the police were kind enough to tell us about it and not give us a ticket.
Were his brother and his dad high-fiving him?
For
getting caught being the man?
His dad was not, but his dad was always fond of me after that. His brother was just a scumbag.
I was on prom committee, even though I was predominantly punk rock in high school, but I loved Saved by the Bell and 90210 and John Hughes movies and figured that I needed my prom to be a magical place. So I campaigned for Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper to be our prom song, and I lost to some Drew Hill song by like a landslide. And I think because I scared every possible boy that would ask me away in high school, I went with my gay best friend, Cesar. And I had fun. It was great. That's my prom.
Time After Time would have definitely been a better. That was way to go. Well,
it was because of Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. I like wanted that exact scene to
happen. They were all afraid of you because your taste was so breathtakingly good.
Maybe that. Maybe some other things.
Did that get a single vote besides you?
Not that I found out about.
You and Cesar.
Like, people really appreciated me and my passion for things, but it didn't always win in every situation.
I think we all still appreciate your passion for things.
True. But you still can't win.
So, Eric, tell us about private school prom.
Oh, God. Well, I mean,
was it very private?
It was. Well, it was. I mean,
better
it was,
than our public school proms?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It was. I mean, well, I went to three, and I really... Briefly, like one was in a barn, like behind the Visionary Arts Museum in Baltimore, because it was really, really cool. It was gorgeous, and and I had a really similar kind of relationship that you had Brady, then to the one that you had with this girl Electra. We met
Electra.
Well,
Electra.
Yeah,
her real name.
That's her real name. Yeah,
she was complex.
Oh, I love it. I'll probably tell this story actually on a later podcast because it's kind of weird and nice. But we met while inventorying the library one summer, and we went to prom together and we rode in the limo.
Inventory
and
was so sensual.
It's amazing. Like there's the dust, the books, and the shelves, and you're like in these long columns of desire. So yeah, it was.
Is Columns of Desire going to be the name of your romance novel?
Absolutely. You can buy it now on Amazon.com. Not really.
Columns of Desire by R. Eric Thomas.
My prom is fairly uneventful. The only thing that really sticks out in my brain about it is that I went with this girl I was friends with, but we weren't dating, and I had no, real interest in any of it. We were just buddies, and we went to the prom, and afterwards we're standing outside, and some guy was like, "Oh, are you coming back to Lewandowski's house or whatever to the party?" And I was like, "Nah, I don't think so." And everyone's like, "Why not?" And I was like, "Well, I don't drink. And she's not going to have sex with me, so I kind of don't see the point." And everyone looked kind of horrified, and the girl looked at everybody and was just like, "No, it's true, I'm not going to have sex with this guy." So that was kind of the end of it.
That's pretty good. Honesty is important.
Hey, everybody, so just to let you know some stuff that we're all doing coming up for you to come out to, I will be hitting the First Person Arts Story Slam down there at 6 in Bainbridge at L'Etage. On Tuesday, October 23rd, no guarantee that I'll go up, but I'll be throwing my name in the hat.
This is TJ Hurley. I have a show coming up on November 15th called Comedy Deconstruction, also at L'Etage at the corner of 6th and Bainbridge. Should be a good time.
Eric Thomas here. I'll be hosting the First Person Arts Grand Slam on November 7th, kicking off the First Person Festival. So you can find more information at firstpersonarts.org.
I'm Jamie Fontaine, and I will be hosting, as I do every month, Second Stories on November 13th at The Dive at 947 East Pass Young Avenue, and our theme will be fan fiction, and it's going to get weird.
This is Hillary Ray. Looking forward to being in Philly Sketchfest and the First Person Festival in November, and you can check out hillaryray.com/shows.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. This has been another episode of The World Exists podcast, number 3. Thanks a ton to the roundtable today. Again, my name is Brady Dale. You can find me on Twitter at Brady Dale. We've been here with TJ Hurley, who's on as Timothy J. Hurley. Our Eric Thomas, our Eric. I want to change my name so I can be our Brady.
Make as much sense,
though. Jamie Fontaine at Jamie Fontaine and Hillary Ray, aka Crush Comedy. Here's a reason to tune in next week.
And the director of the show has this really long gray hair, and she just like sit in the mirror, like brushing her hair and saying, "God bless us, everyone," which was my line in the show.